You know it's Action Features time.
Oh, the future. Did you hear about the future that she's talking about there?
She's talking about the future, yeah.
It's about a future world. Hey, everybody, it's time for Action Features.
That group... that group is Blouse. Oh. That's the name of the group.
And like
the,
a shirt.
It's Time Travel. Time Travel is the name of the song. Yeah.
It feels like we just did this last week because the episode went up late.
Yep, but we didn't.
But we didn't just do this last week. It's been 2 weeks. We got some treats in the cupboard.
Our
biggest fan stopped by.
That's right.
And he introduced us to our most engaging fan, Donette, our biggest fan, who clocks in at 11 foot 3 inches tall now.
Yeah, okay, he's growing.
He's grown a little.
He's a
bit.
Growing boy.
He's a growing boy. Christopher, he keeps getting bigger and bigger. He is the biggest fan.
Yeah.
He took a picture with us, and maybe I'll post it on the Facebook.
Our most engaging fan, what's that about?
Because he's engaged to her.
Hey,
you get it?
Yeah.
So now she's our most engaging fan. I came up with that on the spot.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
So a big shout out to both of them. And they brought us treats.
Special treats.
Special treats.
Let's get them. I'll get them.
You want to grab those? He gets stuff from Snyder's of Hanover, and they have this like thing where they do them in like a silver bag, so you don't know which kind you're getting. But then he told us which kind we were getting, so he kind of defeated the purpose of the silver bag. But that's okay. That's all right.
Okay.
That's okay. You can bring them along.
Okay. I don't know. I don't remember what's in them, honestly.
You don't remember what's in this?
I don't.
I do, so I won't say anything.
Hmm.
So maybe I should tear it open and just let you try.
At least one of us could have a surprise.
Oh, yeah. It's inside out inside there. That's way cool.
Yeah, that's pretty
neat.
It's
way cool. Don't look. Close your eyes.
Okay. I'll do a blind taste test.
See if you can figure out which kind it is.
No offense to any blind people. Oh, it's honey mustard.
It is honey mustard.
Yeah.
And you can see on the inside, they've taken the wrapper inside out. That is so cool.
It's cool.
It's cool, man. You don't know what you're getting.
You don't know. It's a blind pack.
Yeah, it's a blind pack. The cool blind pack.
The only kind of blind pack that I am okay with.
We're going to talk about those in a second here. But I do want to say one more time, big shout out to our biggest fan and our most engaging fan for the treats. All right.
Thanks for the treats.
Blind packs. Boss fight. Tell them about it.
Do we want to do this?
Tell them about it.
Hey, everybody, I want to tell you about blind packs. Okay, so Boss Fight Studios... new independent company who did the Vitruvian hacks, all the Spartan warriors and everything, and as well as Blank Bodies, these excellent,
those are good,
4-inch scale, 1/18 scale, really, Blank Bodies that you could do custom things with, announced that they were doing some accessory packs that you could use in conjunction with their Blank hero bodies, and so they have an Anubis head and a robot. And it's not just a head, but it comes with other accessories too.
And so is it just a head?
It's not just a head.
Okay.
It's a head and maybe a belt or a weapon or hands of some kind, whatever goes with it. Very cool looking. Out of the five, I think there were five things. There's a Anubis, a boxer, a robot, and then two rodents. There's a mouse and then a rat.
Yeah, I didn't notice that there were two.
There are two.
I didn't notice that. Why
so,
are there two rodents?
I don't know. I guess people are doing Secret of NIMH customs or something. I don't know.
Are they really?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So anyway, these are great, great looking and a great way to accessorize with what they have. And they've made the decision to have them be blind packed, which means you place an order for whatever. You know how blind packs work in the store. You just pick up a bag, and whatever you get
out of it
is what you get. So, with the chances being two out of five that you're going to get a giant rodent,
yeah.
I want the Anubis, but I don't know that I'm going to be able to get it.
I want the Cthulhu.
Oh, there's a Cthulhu head too. Yeah,
but I don't want.
Which is really cool looking.
I don't want the boxer. I don't want the weird robot looking thing.
You'd be willing to pay for the one thing.
Yeah.
Not willing to pay for...
I don't want to pay for the other thing. And shipping, on top of that, that's the thing about blind packages when you're in a store. If it's like $5 or $6, and you feel like taking a gamble, then it's right there. And you can open it and then get another one if you're like, well, I'll try again. If you're ordering them through the mail, you have to wait all that time for it to get here. The amount of disappointment when it shows up and it's the boxer, when you wanted Cthulhu... You're not going to order another one.
Why would
you're
want
not
going to
go, hey, let's get another one coming in here.
Prices haven't been announced yet, but I'm assuming they're going to be about $10.
Yeah.
Maybe $7, but you pay $7 and another $7 for shipping, and then what?
And you get something you didn't want.
You're going to have something that you didn't want. Oh, that was
rough.
That was fun. $14 down.
Blind Packs does not work through mail order.
I don't think anybody from there is listening to the podcast, but if they are, reverse that decision and just make it
separate.
Just sell them the way they are. That's silly.
They're
really on a roll. I mean, everything they've shown is really cool.
And all the figures look great.
I
mean, the rat ones even look cool. It's just not something I would want.
Right.
The
sculpt
is not something I would want.
Yeah. And there's something for everybody, but you just don't know what it's going to be. What are you going to do? Start trading? Are we going to trade online with people?
Trading cards?
Yeah,
find a trading forum online.
Yeah.
I'm going to open up this Danish thing I bought and cut it in half. That way
you're
not waiting on me. If you want to eat your half now,
please do. So tonight, we were going to do this last time actually, and we wound up having Toy Fair and then the sad passing of Bill Paxton. So now it's we're going to talk about Image Comics.
Image Comics, 25 years old.
25 years old. Image
that?
Comics. I really can't.
It shocked me when I read it the other day. That's where this whole thing started when we were starting talking about. I can't believe Image Comics is 25 years old.
Yes.
That's a long time.
Yes, it is.
I feel like Image is still a new company, and it's 25 years old.
It's 25 years old. Time flies when you're creating comics.
When you're creating comic books.
Yeah.
So let's do a little history.
Yeah, let's talk about the history of the first.
It started in 1992. I was heavy into comics at this time.
Yeah.
But I was reading mostly Marvels and DCs. But I would still get comic shop news when I went to the comic shop, or like the little... I think it was still called Comic Shop News at that point. I don't know if I was really reading Wizard at that point, if Wizard had even started. I can't remember. But I think most of my news came from Comic Shop News.
Mm-hmm.
And just hearing people talk about stuff at the comic shop. I really liked... I was heavy into X-Men at the time and Spider-Man. So the artists that were at that time for X-Men was Mark Silvestri, Jim Lee. And over in Spider-Man, you had Todd McFarlane, Eric Larson... so those were the hot artists for Marvel. Mm-hmm. So when I heard that Image was going to be, that Image was happening and then these artists were jumping ship, it was like, wow, that's huge. That's like all the guys I like at Marvel.
Yeah.
They're all going to be gone. And then when it happened, it was a pretty big thing. Cause you know, when you're growing up, there's Marvel and there's DC. That's
pretty much what there is.
And you get a little bit of independent comics out there. You know, Ninja Turtles was, you know, Mirage and Archie Comics. Little things like that, but for the driving force was Marvel and DC. So for another company to come in and have another superhero group of comics coming out was a huge deal, man.
Yeah.
This was a big, big deal when it happened. And all the big names of comics going there was like... It was like dumbfounding. It was just...
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe that Marvel was going to lose all these guys. Who was going to take over Spider-Man? Who was going to do X-Men if Jim Lee's not doing X-Men? And what's going to happen now? Or do these guys... And all this... You know, it all stemmed from the creator-owned thing. They were all unhappy at Marvel.
Yeah. That's why I want to talk about the triumph of this move.
That is amazing.
It was like eight guys, I think. Right? It was like eight guys total is what Wikipedia said.
It was Eric Larson,
Rob
Todd
Liefeld.
McFarlane, Mark Silvestri, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Will Spartaccio, but his sister got sick at the time, so Wetworks didn't come out right off the bat. Chris Claremont was the only, I think, writer that jumped ship at the time.
Okay.
Because it was a big deal that all the X-Books were losing people. Let me run through this again.
Jim Valentino.
Jim Valentino, that's what I'm forgetting. So it was Eric Larson and Todd McFarlane from Spider-Man.
Will Sportic.
That's Will Spartaccio, I said that
Spartaccio,
one.
Yeah. Okay.
Will Spartaccio and Mark Silvestri and Jim Lee from X-Men, and Chris Claremont writing from X-Men, Rob Liefeld from X-Force. And I think that covers everybody. And Jim Valentino, I don't really know what he was doing at the time.
Guardians of the Galaxy is what is listed on Wikipedia.
I wasn't reading that, so that wasn't a big deal to me. He was the one out of the group that I was kind of like, I really don't know who this is.
Who's that guy?
And he wasn't like a superstar artist compared to the other ones.
Yeah.
Will Spartaccio a little bit too. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but that's the way I've always said his name. He was a little bit too like, he's not as big a name as the rest. I wonder what he's going to be able to carry over with him. Although I really liked his art.
Yeah.
And now looking back at it, I'm like, wow,
one of the better
ones of the group. And Wetworks, which we didn't grab a Wetworks book to look at.
Yeah.
I remember that book maybe a little more fondly than the others as far as the quality of the book and the originality of the idea, whereas a lot of these are just carbon copies of stuff they were doing at Marvel. One creator in particular that just seems like he was just copying stuff.
Yeah, we're gonna. I'm gonna try personally, at least, not to have this be a Liefeld roast.
I'm gonna try it not to be a Liefeld
because that would be an easy road to go down.
It's really hard not to.
It's gonna come up. But there's some good and there's some bad. Yeah. And this was like, you know, we tend to have this nostalgia on the show. We see things with these nostalgic lenses, and everything that's old is not necessarily good.
There's
and that's not just with Image either. Sometimes I'm flipping through like some old, there were some junk comics from the 80s and from the 70s and whatever, but we're talking about Image and before we get too far, still the triumph of just sticking it to Marvel, because I mean the way it sounds is that, you know, Marvel is paying them that whatever their rates are, and then they're merchandising off these characters, and then
that they create,
right? And not I don't even think they owned their own artwork at that time. I'm not sure, but
I don't know about that. I think they kept, because Todd still got some of his Spider-Man artwork. Okay. So I think they kept their artwork, but anything they created was not theirs,
right?
And so they would use those images they created, the art they created, put it on a T-shirt, put that character on something, make it into a toy, do this with it, do that with it. And all they saw was the rate they got paid for their pages.
Right.
You know, that work, and that's it.
And that's crap.
That's unfair.
Right. So they go to Marvel, and they say, hey, we want to get paid for this. We want this. Marvel doesn't give it to them. They said, all right, bye.
See ya. We'll go do our own thing. And that is the big triumph. Whatever we say about these books, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because what came from Image being created was a huge focus on creators keeping the rights to the work that they do, and opening the doors to ideas and stories and characters that didn't have to be just done through Marvel and DC. You could do something else somewhere else. You could get TV shows made out of it. You could get movies made out of it. You could get toys made out of it, and it would still be yours, and you didn't have to put all your stuff into somebody else's basket and let them reap the benefits from it. And that's still, to this day, Image is still very focused on creator-owned titles, Walking Dead, and some of these books are still going that we're going to look at here today, and they're still owned by those same creators. And there's been little bumps in the road where there were fights amongst the founders, and there's been issues with certain creators being brought onto a book, and then that book trying to contain that character still and not giving that what they'd done at Marvel kind of happening again. With like McFarlane and Neil Gaiman creating Angela and then him trying to use Angela still and Neil Gaiman saying, well, that's my character. So they got trapped in the same thing that they escaped at Marvel, but I still don't think they were ever doing it to that degree at Marvel.
Yeah, it's not like they had the guys up top who were trying to.
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically taking. I mean.
Totally.
And I could see how that would happen with the crossover. There's a whole lot of crossovers going on, and we'll get into some of that. But kudos to him. I mean, stick it to the man. And it's everybody was excited. I remember,
I was really excited.
Like, I was not following comics really at all. I mean, I was just picking up whatever I could get at Kroger or something. It was like, but I definitely noticed a shift when Image characters started coming out. When I saw Spawn, I was like, what is this?
Who is this guy?
What? Look at that cape.
Yeah.
What?
I feel like customizing figures kind of became a thing, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because people wanted, before McFarlane started doing the toys, you wanted toys of the Image guys.
I remember making a Spawn figure out of
I made a Spawn, too.
Spider-Man, I think.
I made it out of a Toy Biz Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably horrendous.
Yep.
I wish I could find it, because it's probably a terrible, terrible job. But it did inspire a lot of people to go, you know, we've had Superman toys for forever, we've had X-Men toys for a long time, we've had these toys for a long time, that. But these are new comic characters I'm really interested in, and it doesn't seem like I'm going to get toys for them. We didn't know at the time that we were going to get toys for them. But it inspired a lot of people to start making their own stuff.
Yeah, and you had, like you said, Wizard and Hero Illustrated both.
That
giving a section for that. That's when I first saw my first custom figures. And
yeah, Wizard, and I think Wizard rode the coattails of Image a lot. Like it, that Wizard magazine seemed like it was, it kind of was concurrent with Image's rise and sort of fall. Image is still around, but it definitely did take a dip.
That's where I got most of my Image comic. I mean, that's where I got most of my comic news was those. Wizard and Hero, and I would just pick those up, and you know, I was a fan of Solar or whatever, and I never read a Solar issue or knew who they were.
But they were in those magazines.
Ninjak?
Yeah, man, totally.
Oh, I love Ninjak.
I'm totally into Nexus, man.
Yeah.
I'm totally into it now. It really is a kind of a triumph all the way around that this happened, and that it became such a huge monster hit. And the things that have spun out of it.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at some of these early books, and then I think we'll talk about some of the things that have spun out of certain books. I think we should start with the first book that Image published was Youngblood. Youngblood issue one was the first actual Image comic that came out, if I'm not mistaken. So we should probably start there.
Okay.
And it kind of feeds into another book as we go.
Do you want to list what comics we read? We read comics in preparation.
Let's talk about the ones we read. So let's go to that Youngblood. Youngblood issue that I snagged for us to check out, the earliest one that was at the comic shop for a cheapy price was Youngblood issue 3. Yep. It was Youngblood. It was rough.
I gotta tell you, it was rough.
It was really rough to read this one. This is written and created and penciled by Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
And you 100% can tell.
You can tell. Big time.
In the case of some of these guys, they were artists first.
Yeah.
And they weren't really writers. So they were trying to become a writer artist at the same time.
Right.
You know, start a new company and become a writer. And so for that, I try to give Liefeld some slack here because he's supposed to be just an artist. But the problem is he's barely that either. Is not very good.
I always felt
I've never liked Liefeld's art.
I don't either. I feel like really this is an objective view. I'm not slamming or whatever. Like he's a kid who was drawing and then was in the right place at the right time and got in and never bothered to improve or to learn.
Yeah.
He never had anybody tell him, hey, this sucks. You really need to work on your hands. You really need to work on your perspective here. You need to work on your anatomy. It was just like, he just got to go with it. He just got to run with it. And
for some reason it became huge.
Yeah.
And since it became huge, he had no reason to change it.
Well,
or to improve it.
I think, you know, we're talking about there was the independent comics boom in the 80s, and there was a lot of like weird, neat stuff going on.
Yeah.
A lot of good artists, some not so great artists. But the standard still was DC and Marvel. And a lot of these artists carried over, but it was like when you see, I mean, I remember being a kid and seeing Rob Liefeld's art.
Yeah.
And Jim Lee, both. And it's obvious that Rob Liefeld was now trying to sort of copy Jim Lee. At least that's my take on it. And he was like, this is the new thing. And it's energetic. There's a lot of energy in it. And I think that's what sold it. It was like this new, exciting, lots of lines, lots of muscle, tissue, and veins everywhere. And it was exciting. But now that, you know, after the dust settles, you're looking at it and you're like, this is awful. I mean, it's really just awful.
With Jim Lee, his stuff was really, I mean, it had the big muscles and the girls posed and the exaggerated stances.
Right.
It had the energy, but it was clean. And the proportions, even though they were exaggerated, his perspective works.
And
he's consistently improved you know, over the years. That still is Jim Lee, and you can still look
at
Jim Lee art from then and up till now, and you know it's Jim Lee. But it's gotten better and better, and he's tried to better himself as he's gone. Whereas I think Rob Liefeld's been content to just be Rob Liefeld.
I think it seems like Jim Lee is somebody who had probably a formal training and learned the basics of anatomy, and he learned the rules.
Yeah.
And then he was able to bend those rules and manipulate them, whereas Rob Liefeld didn't learn the rules. He just learned little pieces, and he's fitting. Like, I noticed things like his feet shapes – or there are certain things that he does that I see somebody else do better, or I see Jim Lee do it better, and I'm like, oh, Rob Liefeld, I mean, he did the same thing that I did when I was like 10 years old. You know, every kid learns that way.
Yeah.
Rob Liefeld just continued to only just like, well, here's that shape, and I'll just plug it in, and it doesn't work.
It doesn't.
So anyway, yeah, Youngblood was...
Well, that's his art. His writing reminds me of the kid that you didn't really want to play with because all his stuff was better than yours.
Right. Every character is so cool.
Every character is so cool, and every character is stronger than yours, every character is faster than yours, and everyone has better hair than yours.
Yeah.
No, my guy can do this. Well, my guy can do this then.
Right.
And that's exactly what this entire book reads like.
I noticed a lot of...
The Youngblood team was he immediately made it the premier team of Image.
Right.
Like it's the top guys,
right.
And it's the best guys,
right.
And they're superstar status, and
right.
They've got a toy deal, and they're celebrities, and they're awesome.
Yes,
and they're,
the whole book was very much stroking its own ego, and
yeah.
A lot of talk about this and that,
terrible
and
names,
Shaft, and
just wretched names,
bad. I mean, just everything. Like every character's. Talks in a certain way. They all speak the same. They all speak like, I got a crazy quip. Hey,
yeah.
We're going to crash the party. Not today. You know, like every single character is Michelangelo.
I counter with a kick to his ribs. See how he likes it. He loses his sword. I give it back.
Right.
Splorch.
That was another thing with, I think it was that book. There's the narration. There's the,
Yeah.
You don't know who's actually narrating this book because it's like a third person historical thing, and then on another page it's like I did this and I did that, and I was
all
like,
over the place.
Wait, who's telling this story exactly?
And it's almost like you're supposed to, like, I don't know, that you're supposed to look up to these characters and think how cool they are, but at the same time all I can think of is that I hate these characters.
They just,
like, there's nothing appealing about
them. They just
them
bicker the whole time
whatsoever. It's
there's
just...
the first page, I think, is Shaft. There's a guy with the same hair as Shaft telling Shaft that he needs to
get his hair
done. And Shaft said, no, I don't want any part of that. But you obviously have had a part in it because
your
hair is the same.
Look at your hair. Save it, Bedrock. She's mine. Somehow. I doubt it. It's just not good.
It's really not good.
It's really not good. But it's a testament to the fact of the big boom of Image that this book made it. And it was so huge that Youngblood got... I think three different toy lines. It got the Bendies.
The Bendays.
It had the small little, like, metal figures, maybe.
Yeah, I think
they're like two packs or something.
Yeah.
And then McFarlane. He had the McFarlane deal where there was a wave of Youngblood figures. And there was going to be animation for Youngblood. They did a pilot for it, and there was going to be an animated Youngblood. And there was big talks about a Youngblood movie at the time. And for a book to be this bad and to have all that going for it, Rob Liefeld knew how to ride the hype machine.
Yeah.
You know,
he did something right.
He did something right for a book this awful to make it. Okay, so move away from Youngblood. And Rob Liefeld, he is the polarizing force in Image 2.
Yeah.
Like, it split up the founders over his, you know, you can read about it on Wikipedia or different sites about his business practices and how he kind of maybe was taking a bit more than he should be taking of the pie for other projects, and certain creators left and then were willing to come back after he left. So he's
right.
Definitely... And from personal experience of meeting him at shows,
he's
not a pleasant experience.
Right.
He's not.
I get that vibe.
So let's move on to Savage Dragon.
Yeah, let's talk about... Yeah.
Number 3, because it kind of ties into this. They mentioned... That's the one thing about these early books that I thought was cool, was that all the books kind of mention other books.
Yeah.
There's these reporters that are the same throughout all the books, and
right.
They look the same. And they're mentioning little things like, what about that cop in Chicago with the fin on his head? And they mentioned
right.
that in Youngblood book, or what's happening with the guy in New York with the red cape. And
yeah.
Little teasers that they were showing that they were trying to build a universe. Even though there were different creators with their own things, they were still trying to show that, hey, we're trying to create a cohesive
right.
universe.
And you have separate artists sort of giving nods to their other teammates.
Yeah.
I mean... Once again, the scenario of taking this, I don't want to call it a cushy job, but you're kind of working a dream job for a lot of people. You're working at Marvel Comics. Given the middle finger to it,
yeah.
proverbially, possibly literally, and walking out, these guys had to be busting their butts because there's so many titles that came out. I mean, we only scratched the surface, but there are so many titles.
There's a lot of books.
And like you said, they're trying to build up a universe, so it's kind of... It's kind of neat to see them really go at it. Just,
yeah.
We're going to put out a bunch of books. Which might be why the quality is lesser on some...
On certain books, yeah, exactly. Now, there are certain creators, and they sort of stayed more focused. Like Eric Larson, he seems like he only wanted to do Savage Dragon. No. That's what he was interested in doing. And that's what he's consistently done since Image started.
Hmm.
Savage Dragon. And kudos to that. That's what he set out to do, and that's what he's doing, and that's what he's going to keep doing. And that's the way this entire book kind of reads. With Rob Liefeld's books, I got a feeling of, I want to throw out as much as I can. It was definitely quantity over quality for Rob Liefeld. Like, he just wanted to, I want all the superheroes in the universe. I want this team, and I want to build this team, and this team, and this character, and that character. And just throwing just tons of stuff out. And I don't remember a single one of his characters. I just don't remember them. They're totally not memorable because he just wanted to just do as many as he could.
Well, they're all X-Men ripoffs.
Yeah, they're all carbon copies of other guys you've seen before.
There's a lot of Wolverine hair.
A lot of Wolverine hair. But Savage Dragon was different. And he remains different.
It was. And
he's not a carbon copy of something else.
The artwork is pretty decent.
Eric Larson, I liked more than Todd McFarlane on Spider-Man. I liked Eric Larson's Spider-Man better.
Hmm.
I thought it was more energetic. I liked the look of the characters better. I just liked him better as an artist. So Savage Dragon art, for me, is probably my favorite art. Wildcats is pretty great with Jim Lee. But it's up there. It's up there for me, the Eric Larson art in Savage Dragon.
Yeah.
And the coloring was really neat.
I thought that one was...
It was a fun read.
It was fun. It was one of the better ones. I kind of groaned when Bad Rock showed up.
I did too, but at the same time, it's almost like Eric Larson had to put Bad Rock in there and made it into almost a jab at Liefeld's brand of superheroing.
Yeah.
Because he comes in there to pick a fight with him to join Youngblood, which seems like something that actually would be something Rob Liefeld would write in Youngblood.
Right.
So it was almost like...
That's what it felt like, was that Rob Liefeld wrote this whole section,
which
was the majority of the comic book, and at the end you find out it was just
to get him to join, and Savage Dragon just treats it like it's really stupid.
And that was the redeeming quality, was that his reaction was my reaction, and I said, okay, I'm back on with this character.
Panel right here. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Right.
And that's the writing of Eric Larson in the book, whereas it felt to me, reading back at it, like, yeah, this seems like something that Rob Liefeld would really do in the book. Like, we'll send this guy out, and he'll test him to see if he's ready for the team. And that's stupid.
Yeah.
That's really stupid.
Really dumb.
And he treats it like it's stupid. And I like his main bad guy. You know, Overlord is a cool name for a bad guy.
AKA Savage Dr. Dragon. Doom.
Yeah.
That was my weak
spot. He looks kind of like Dr. Doom. Like,
this is a lot like...
But Savage Dragon is a unique looking character. Yeah. You get a cool poster in the middle of the book.
Yeah.
They
were really pushing. A lot of these
cameo
had...
Cameo by Spawn, too, in there.
Yeah. A lot of these had little... Trading cards that you could cut out. They were put in the spine. I thought that was neat, and most of these had a poster too. So they were really pushing and trying to get extra goodies in there, which is kind of neat. Yeah. Get that one next, sure.
So next we have Shadowhawk number 2 from Jim Valentino.
Whew.
And again, this was the one creator out of the bunch that I didn't really know.
And this was that released with a foil cover?
Maybe, I don't
know. Or something. I must have had that issue, because there were several panels in there that I remembered. They struck a chord with me. I was like, I remember seeing that. I might have even copied and drawn some of them.
He's not a bad artist. I'm not saying he's bad.
It's not bad.
It's just not at the same level as some of these other guys.
It's not. And I think it would suit a different subject matter
animated
better.
Animated stuff.
Yeah,
Archie
like Archie, or like something that was like...
This
not,
dark...
Yeah,
character. This
supposed
this
to
art
be a,
is
dark,
a little too cartoony looking.
Yeah, it just kind of didn't work.
And the Spawn appearance is 100% just to throw a Spawn appearance on
it
the
just
cover.
Put a Spawn
he just shows up and tells him, "Hey, take care of it," and that's it.
Yeah,
and that's the kind of cameo that I really dislike.
Yeah,
where it's just on there just to be put on the cover to help sell the book.
Somebody's got to sell Shadowhawk.
And that's how we're going to do it. We're going to put Spawn on the cover. And this terrible villain at the end, the Liquifier. The art is not good on him.
Not good.
But I don't want to dog Jim Valentino, because it's like, you're trying, man. You're trying something different. You wanted to get out there. He had to know he was a bigger risk doing this, leaving Marvel and the job he had at Marvel, versus a guy like Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, Eric Larson, who had big followings at that time. Jim Valentino didn't. So kudos to him for taking more of a risk than the other guys.
Yeah.
And he's still with Image. I think he's one of the executive officers or creative director or something like that. Not so much doing books anymore, but still taking on like more of an office role, I think, which is great. You know, if you've stuck with it and you've turned it into a career, that's great. There's just nothing memorable about Shadowhawk to me.
It's a Wolverine.
Wolverine meets Darkhawk.
It's Wolverine meets Darkhawk. It's not, yeah, it just didn't seem very compelling. Even though when I was a kid, I loved the design.
Because
it was anything cool. As a matter of fact, we had a code word. My mom did. She's like, we need to have a code word in case I send somebody to pick you up and a stranger comes to pick you up. They have to know the code word. So I picked Shadowhawk. That was the code word.
That's amazing.
And so that was the, so.
I'm going to use that from now on when I'm going to pick you up.
When you come to pick
when
me
I
up.
I come to pick you up
yeah,
from
places, school.
I'll say Shadowhawk so you know it's me.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's do
like good, bad. So it's not a.
We'll do Wildcats?
Yeah, okay. Okay. Let's do Wildcats.
So Jim Lee Wildcats, this is the only one we have an issue one of, right?
I think
the Brigade
so.
We got issue one, too.
Yeah.
Wildcats, I like Wildcats.
Yeah.
This original team of Wildcats, even though the book is not the best, it's silly in many regards that this is a covert team.
Yeah, it's a covert team, and everything they have is very... in public, everything is very... I think... Is it that book, or... No, it's not that book. But everything they have is very loud, you know, loud colors.
Yeah. Being.
But, I mean, it has some of the same trappings of all the other Image comics, but there's... Jim Lee's art, once again, is pretty solid. And the writing in this book seemed like it was... There is a storyline going here, and this makes sense as a... There's a progression instead of...
Here's just a bunch of people fighting each other.
Yeah.
Here's another guy fighting another. Yeah, that's the one book out of this bunch where I was kind of intrigued to see where the characters would go from here is this one.
There's a lot of rip-off characters, too, but there's, like, Grifter.
Grifter's cool,
is
man.
Is really cool. It's a cool-looking character.
He's a cool-looking
I mean, good...
character. He acts cool. He has some cool, almost like Jack Burton lines from Big Trouble in Little China. Like, he had that kind of vibe to me. And like you said, the art is really solid. It's still solid to this day to look back at it. And it felt the most like what I expected out of Jim Lee, too. Like, it felt like an X-Men book, kind of.
Yeah.
Like a good team superhero book.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though we were introduced to a lot of characters, I didn't feel like any of them were just kind of throwaway carbon copies of something else.
Yeah.
Even though they were similar in many ways.
Yeah, they had some elements, but...
They didn't feel like straight rip-offs of other characters.
Yeah.
And they... At no point was I annoyed by any of the characters. Like, well, this character really sucks. And this is another one that kind of was one of the bigger successes of Image. It had a toy line from Playmates. It had a cartoon. So it did a good job of riding that hype train. And then eventually... Jim Lee's Wildstorm imprint got sold to DC, and he's gone on to do major things at DC. One of the big creative forces at DC now. But as far as a fun, just comic from the 90s, Wildcats issue one works for me.
Yeah. Also, after X-Men had been running, it was kind of difficult, I imagine, to come up with anything.
Yeah.
Like, without having elements, you had to have a claw guy, and you had to have a... I think the lead guy is cool.
Spartan,
yeah. I mean, he reminds me of like a, from an 80s cartoon.
Yeah, he reminds me of like a Cyclops, like the goody
two-shoes
kind of leader. He fits that. He's not an annoying leader. Like the Shaft character in Youngblood.
Very annoying.
Super annoying.
Yeah.
Very annoying character. Spartan, though, I like Spartan. He seems like he's fulfilling
John Spartan.
The good guy role.
Yeah.
Grifter, we've already said he's cool. But he's maybe one of my favorite Image characters overall. He's...
Yeah.
Those trench coat Gambit type characters are always like the cool guy characters. But he is really cool.
He's a really cool character. He's
got a neat persona, neat mask, cool guns, cool... His narration. Narration can be very annoying in certain comics, but his narration works.
Yeah.
Overall, cool comic. Cool toys that came out of it. The cartoon show was pretty wretched, but...
Yes, but
cool toys.
That's cool. Want to do this?
This is the worst one of the bunch.
Yeah.
This one was absolutely brutal to make it through. Brigade Issue 1, brought to you by creator and co-plotter Rob Liefeld, and penciler co-plotter Marat Michaels, who is doing his best to be Rob Liefeld throughout this book. This is awful.
It was really bad.
It is an awful book. I don't remember any of the characters' names. I just remember that they fought a lot over no reason. It was poorly drawn with lots of giant empty spaces.
It's basically, it felt like the leftovers from
Youngblood.
Youngblood.
And I don't even want the main course of Youngblood.
You don't want...
This is exactly what we were saying before about Rob Liefeld was just throwing out as much stuff as he could.
Right.
And Youngblood was the best he had.
Yeah.
And if that's the best you've got, then you know the rest of the stuff's pretty bad.
You can't distinguish one team from the other team, honestly. I mean, everything looks...
Yeah, they make a big deal about, really, will the Youngblood show up or will it be Brigade?
Right. Who cares?
I don't care if either one shows up. How about the Wildcats show up instead?
What if the Wildcats were to show up?
What if the Wildcats show up? I'd rather they show up to fix this problem because I don't want to have anything to do with Brigade. And you know, on this cover of Brigade Issue 1, it says you can win this cover and see details inside.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the details inside.
I don't want to win the cover.
I don't want to win the cover. I don't want to have anything to do with this book ever again.
That cover, when I saw that, Rob Life, it's Rob's formula of a big figure in the middle and then do some floating heads around
it.
And you don't have to draw any background stuff.
You don't.
You can avoid it. He's still doing that.
Empty spaces in this book, man.
Yeah.
It's the most exciting things in here are these ads. There's an ad for the X-Men trading cards.
Yeah.
Or an X-Men interview in Wizard Magazine, rather.
There were some...
That was exciting.
Once in a while, you get a bad panel, maybe, especially on, like, big production comics, because you're turning through them. Lots of bad panels in there, lots of stuff. And this is another problem.
This guy's tiny face.
Right.
This
is another problem I have with Rob Liefeld, is that everything that he draws seems like this was his first time around. This is his first shot. He didn't sit and draw. He didn't draw something and then spend a lot of time saying, okay, wait a second, I got to erase this, I got to redraw this, get out the tracing paper, draw over this. I mean, he didn't labor over any of this. Just put it down and whatever was there,
get it out.
Hey, that's it.
This is your first page.
Yeah, it's rough.
This guy running in these biker shorts with these weird hand things and this odd proportions.
Weights.
And why is everybody's like got this weird kind of odd skin color to them? It's just weird. I don't know if they're supposed to have like an alien skin or if they just don't know how to color.
Alien skin. Well, that's the thing.
This is an awful comic.
It's an especially awful first issue because nothing's established. There's nothing established there.
Yeah, it's just I guess you're supposed to care about these guys that are fighting each other over a girl, but I've never met these characters before. So
never met the girl.
I care
never
about them.
It's just thrown in there just to be there. You know, dudes with ponytails is like, yeah, really bad names. What's it?
Stasis, KO, Seahawk.
Seahawk.
Why is that guy's name Seahawk?
Right.
It has nothing to do with the sea.
He flies. He has a...
He's super strong and can fly.
I think that's the guy with the Batman mask. So it's not even a hawk.
I don't even know.
It's not even a hawk-shaped mask. He has horns, right?
I don't even know, man.
It's the guy on the front.
I really don't know. I don't remember who's who in this book. Is that him? Is that Seahawk?
I think that's him, yeah, right
there.
That's
awful.
It's not a hawk. It's not a hawk's outfit. I'll tell you that much. Yeah.
Man, this is awful.
Dress him as a hawk if you want to.
What's going on here, Does he have like a weird like armor thing around his private area?
Yeah, private's armor. They got all that chastity belt, I believe.
So, yeah, definitely pick up Brigade Issue 1 if you want to have an awful comic in your collection. You should have Brigade Issue 1 on hand in case you're reading a comic and go, this isn't that good.
You can look
it
at that.
Definitely still not be the worst comic you've ever read because you've got Brigade Issue 1. Jeez.
That's an awful comic.
That is awful. And somebody...
I don't even remember hearing about that when it was out, honestly.
But somebody paid seven figures to Rob Liefeld in order to be able to make a movie from Brigade.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Well, Hugh Jackman's done now, so somebody's got to put on some Wolverine hair.
Somebody's got to be a Brigade. All right, so this is the last one we actually read, right? And that's Spawn Issue 8.
Yeah.
This is the earliest one I could get at the shop.
Yeah.
It didn't have the earlier issue.
Classic cover.
It's a redo of his old Spawn, Spider-Man cover.
Yeah.
Not a lot of Spawn in this issue.
That was the one disappointing thing, and I got the feeling from some of the other Spawn comics that I had read that it was one of those... I have that problem with the Shadow, you know, when like the DC Shadow run, it was like... Or some of them. It was like, there's a whole lot of other stuff going on with other people, and then the Shadow shows up and he's like, hey, I know about this.
Hey, guess what?
Well, I want to see you
I want to see you
take care of this.
I want to see you do that. This cover, especially, when you get a cover like this,
yeah,
that's a really cool, you know, homage to a Spider-Man cover. Yeah. And it's just Spawn on right. the cover. I expect some Spawn in the book.
You expect a little bit of
and
Spawn.
There is no really Spawn other than flashbacks.
There are some...
This is the story of Billy Kincaid, who was like a child killer that Spawn killed in a previous issue.
Okay.
And his journey through... can we say H-E double hockey sticks?
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's okay. a place.
So, and his journey through hell.
Is, yeah.
Now, I'd kind of forgotten about this, but this issue is written by Alan Moore.
Right.
Who wrote yeah. Watchmen and V for Vendetta and a major, major comic writer. And I'd forgotten that Todd and some of those earlier issues had brought in other creators. I remember Neil Gaiman and creating Angela and the Medieval Spawn and all that stuff. But I'd kind of forgotten that he brought in other creators. I think he realized his limitations
yeah.
in writing and creating fully. He was writing and drawing Spider-Man, I believe.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when you're starting something new, he knew to call on some big-name writers. There's an ad in here for the next one where it's Frank Miller is going to write
right.
Spawn. Dave Sim writes a Spawn. So he brought in a lot of big-name talents to do issues. And in that regard, this feels like an Alan Moore story, where it's
well, yeah,
a lesser character and kind of his journey.
Yeah, I was going to say that it shows, and I think of all the books we read, that I think this was the best one. Maybe
yeah.
it wasn't my favorite story. You know, like the storyline was like okay, but it was so easily understandable.
Totally,
it didn't feel too busy. It was like it was well paced, you know. Like I was like, okay, this is a comic story that I'm It wasn't
yeah.
like even with Wildcats, which I think was fun. There's a whole lot going on. There's
a
whole
lot.
Lot of
it's jumping around. And all the other books show their limitations.
Right.
This one's got a real writer behind it.
Right, and that has yeah. a real writer. And to be honest, Todd's my favorite artist of the bunch too. Even though once again, I do like Jim Lee a whole lot, but there were several panels in there where I thought I can see why this is working.
Yeah.
Like, especially in the earlier when he shows the silhouettes of people walking around and stuff. I was like, this works, and I can tell that he's done his homework, that he knows why this works, and he's putting that in there, and I can tell why it works.
I was really impressed by the coloring.
The coloring is great, too, yeah.
And I know that there's some computer coloring going on here, but it's not obnoxious.
I think part of the thing is the matte paper really helps.
I totally agree, man. Yeah. This paper is really nice.
And that was a nice... That is a nice balance, and I do like old... You know, like newsprint, but that's a good balance between what we have now and what we had then.
Man, I totally agree. That's exactly yeah. what I was thinking as I was reading the book. Like, this paper feels great, and these colors are working because of this paper.
Yeah.
And the use of the entire page, he's getting every bit
that's
out.
That's right.
Of it.
He has no margins on.
Yeah,
it's
like full on.
Most of
many
those
pages
he has,
where
yeah.
he's just going as far as he can. And, you know, even Tom McFarlane is not my favorite artist of the bunch either, but as far as these books go, I agree. This is probably
no, I think he's my favorite of...
Oh, he is your favorite of the bunch?
I think so.
Okay.
I mean...
Well, he's not my favorite of the bunch.
Who's
your... Jim Lee is probably my favorite, even though yeah. I didn't really get the Jim Lee thing at the time.
Yeah.
Now, as the years have gone by, I've kind of gone, okay, Jim Lee really is that good,
right.
as I've seen him go on and go on. I'm trying to put myself back at the mindset of this time, and Eric Larson would have probably been my favorite at the time. I'm seeing this through.
Which one did he do?
He did Savage Dragon.
Oh, right. Okay. So, yeah, I agree that he's
good too.
At the time,
I would say that was probably my favorite. In retrospect, and seeing where the artist came from and where they went to, the Jim Lee, I see his pencils better in these books now.
Yeah.
But Todd McFarlane is still up there.
Yeah.
And as far as the whole marriage of the story... The art, the coloring, everything about it, this book was probably
it
the best
came
of the
across
bunch.
Like it was put out by a seasoned veteran and yeah. you know, and it wasn't and there's a reason why that book I think wound up being
the big one.
And it had the movie and it had the
television show.
He started his own toy line, which again was another
that's huge.
I mean that was a huge thing too, because once again it was whatever Hasbro, whatever Kenner and whatever Mattel mm-hmm. wanted to put out, that's what you got. And Todd McFarlane's like, well, I have property and I want to sell some of it. I have a creation
yeah.
and I want to make merchandise too. And he sought, I don't know how he did that.
He shopped it. I talked to Kenner guys before where they said, yeah, he shopped Spawn to us. But we couldn't do anything with it because all it was a comic book. And we needed the toy, we needed the TV show, we needed this, we needed that. And that's when he went, okay, if nobody else wants to do them, I'll just do them myself. And McFarlane Toys is still around.
Yeah.
They're still doing stuff. He's talking about another Spawn movie. The Spawn comic is still being printed.
Yeah.
Spawn figures are coming back into stores.
Those figures changed the landscape of industry. Totally. I mean, even that first wave where it was, what, like 7 points of articulation or eight points like, or something like that?
Yeah, it had knees, hips, shoulders, and neck.
And elbows.
Did the first ones have elbows?
I think they did.
Can't remember.
I could be wrong.
I think you're right. I think they did have elbows.
But even those, looking back, they were pretty basic. But I remember being blown away when I saw those in the magazine.
Me too,
I was like, how did they do that?
That's first Spawn figure.
Because he had that big cape with all those, you know, those ridges in it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a cool looking figure.
Had to have it.
That sculpt is great. Yeah, I was.
And I did have it.
Yeah, I had him. I had Hamburger Head version.
And
Medieval Spawn. Medieval Spawn was awesome.
Medieval Spawn was really cool. Still a cool figure.
Still a great figure.
And it included a comic book. With each one, and that was, you know...
That was great.
A great way to...
Great way to tie it in.
To tie
if you've
it
seen
in.
That at Toy Show, you pick up the comic, then you go to the comic store, and you pick up more of that comic.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a reason why it deserved to be the top book.
Yeah.
It was a fun book to read with good art, and a creator behind it that wanted to do more with it than just be confined to a comic book. He really wanted to make it into something big.
Yeah.
And he did, man. I mean, a full-fledged feature film, a cartoon series on HBO, all of those toys. It just became a big, big thing. Spawn was big.
Yeah.
Image Comics, then. If you want to get back into it, if you want to check out some of these early books, I think we both agree that Spawn is the place to go.
Yeah, go to Spawn.
Maybe
Savage Dragons. You can find a lot of these for cheap.
Yeah, hit your half-price books. You'll find them in the quarter bins.
Yeah.
Your local comic shop, they usually have quarter and 50-cent bins. And it is a fun way to kind of look back at that time and relive it if you were there the first time.
It is its own thing, and it is that time period in comics. There's nothing you can do about it. So it's kind of neat to look back at different periods and see what was going on.
I think it gets poked fun at a lot.
Yeah.
And when I see like parodies of these old comics, it's consistently the Rob Liefeld style of book. But if you've never been exposed to those early years of Image, don't think it's just that. In many regards, Rob Liefeld's books are just that.
Yeah.
But there are some other books in here, like The Spawn and like Savage Dragon, that are just fun comic books that aren't trying to be, you know, out there and too much and too crazy and, you know, hit you in the face with everything right off the bat, where they were happy to be their own books and kind of build something on their own and not looking at trying to rule the world of comics and create as much as they possibly can. So yeah, go back, check out some Spawns, maybe some Savage Dragons, maybe some early Wildcats. You won't be disappointed. It's a couple of quarters in your pocket. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah, what are you going to do with that money?
What are you going to do with a couple of quarters in your pocket?
Get a candy bar?
Yeah, candy bar?
You can't even make a phone call now.
Might as well get Spawn issue 7 then.
Why not?
Why not? All right.
All right. James and Mike with Action Features talking about Image Comics.